Hi, this is Mobile Views Podcast number 141. It's December 14th, 2015, and I'm Todd Ogasawara with my good friend, as usual, John Westfall. This is
on rare occasions, I'm your bad friend.
That's
as
right.
As usual, I'm your good friend.
As usual, yeah, there are some days. I think this is our penultimate podcast, right? And next week will probably be the last one for the year.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
We'll take a little hiatus, and then we'll be back with some crazy thoughts in the new year.
Right, and we will have a special guest on Saturday, so it should be lots of fun, but not John's birds.
No, they're always our special guests.
You're right, they're always our special guests. All right, so the first, I should note, folks, just to prepare you all, John had a rant, a series of rants last week, and he's still in that mood, so we're going to have a couple
I have rants. At least three things that I'm going to rant about today. Two kind of major and one minor little rant, or maybe two minor and one major. Who knows?
Okay.
Maybe four. Okay. Yeah, maybe I got four. I don't know. We'll figure it out as we go along here.
All right, and we'll start one I know you have a rant about, because not everybody has a rant about it. So Microsoft used to have this thing called Microsoft Live... What was it called? Microsoft Live Kit?
Live Writer. And it
Live.
Was live. Like you used to
live
download
toolkit
live
or something.
Installer and add Live this and Live that.
Yeah.
And
Live Messenger.
Yeah, the only good one was Live Writer.
Yeah. So it was a bunch of stuff. Well, there was a video editor that was pretty decent too.
Well, are you talking about Microsoft Photo Story?
No, they had a Microsoft, I forget what the video editor was called, but it could actually do a... You know, I wasn't a professional editor, but of course I'm not a professional videographer, so I didn't need a professional editor. But, you know, it let me trim videos and put them together and that sort of thing. And I think convert them from whatever format I was into, you know, like not MP4, but whatever the standard was back then.
Yeah.
In any case, as John mentioned, one of the components of this Live Toolkit, whatever it was called, I can't remember anymore, was Live Writer, Microsoft Live Writer, which was a blogging tool that worked across a number of platforms, including WordPress. I don't think Microsoft had a blogging platform back then. They briefly had one, whose name escapes me, but then they shut it down and moved all their clients over to WordPress. But anyway, they have open sourced it, and by open sourcing, I don't mean it's outside of Microsoft now. It is run by a group of people, about maybe two dozen people, contributing to the source code. Some who work in Microsoft, some who don't. And back then it would be like 2005, I think it was like 10 years ago. I thought it was a pretty good tool, and I used it for a while, and then it fell into. It became stagnant. Nobody was, well, at least as I could figure out, nobody was supporting because they didn't issue a update in many years. And all of a sudden, this past week, they open sourced it. It's openlivewriter.org. That's openlivewriter.org. And I downloaded a copy and I tried it in my WordPress blog, my self-hosted WordPress blog. Seems to work. I still don't understand how to adjust the images and things using the tool. I can go in to the HTML and adjust it, but using the tool... I'm looking forward to it because, you know, I've been searching for a decent tool to create my WordPress blogs. Although I keep saying I'm going to move off WordPress, I still haven't. So I'm going to take a look at this and see if it works for you. Now, John, you have a different point of view on this.
Well, you know, I think I last used Live Writer in 2009, 2008. It was a nice platform in that it supported plugins. I remember I had a plugin that would do a little bit of image editing and the stuff we do on our phones now. But back then, you needed little tools to like put a fancy border around your photos and all of that.
Right.
This would have been great if Microsoft had open sourced it in, say, 2009 instead of waiting 6 years. And then it would have been a really cool project. I could have seen it really... taking off and really being a useful thing. My parakeets wholeheartedly agree with me on
this. Yeah, they're not happy at all with this situation.
Oh, no. They're just backing me up. They're my hype birds. And they and I agree that we would have had a lot easier time updating our WordPress blogs and everything else if we had had this tool. But unfortunately, it fell into disrepair. When I was still on Windows, I never did find another tool that I liked. And on a Mac, I use a tool called Blogo, which
you mentioned that.
Well,
yeah.
But still, if they had released this in 2009 open source, I could have seen it becoming a really nice client. Now, I don't know how well the team of authors is going to be able to get it kind of adopted and used.
Right.
So and it's been out of the mindset of techies for a long time. Right.
It is a volunteer group. You know, it's not a paid company like, you know, like what is it? Automatic supports WordPress, that sort of thing. So the parakeets apparently agree with you, but not me.
Well, when I'm talking, I don't mute them. So, besides, why would I let my parakeets agree with anyone other than me?
But in any case, I'm hopeful. You know, I think it doesn't have all the features that the Microsoft version had, and Microsoft, in their fact, or I should say, the Open Live Writer group organization in its fact, says that this is actually separate from the original Microsoft Live Writer, so you can run them in parallel if you're still running the original Microsoft one. It is not an official upgrade, or it is a fork.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
I wish I would have had a fork 6 years ago.
Yeah. I know what you mean. It would have been nice to have had a nice tool that had been developing over 6 years instead of laying stagnant somewhere in a dusty corner and all of a sudden. But that said, I'm glad that it has been revived, and I'm looking forward to seeing what may happen to it. As I said, on the Windows side, I paid for BB Edit or something like that on the Mac side, but I really haven't used it. I don't use my Mac as often as I used to for whatever reason. I think because I like Windows 10 now. Mm. Okay. Now, the next thing is kind of a conspiracy theory that someone over, I forgot, I have the link to it, but I didn't write down the author's name. Someone over at Ars Technica said, and that his title is the Pixel C, and for those of you who don't know, the Pixel C is Google's newly released or recently released Android tablet. He says the Pixel C was probably never supposed to run Android. Sounds like a conspiracy theory to me, so we'll do a little conspiracy talking here. So what he's saying is there are clues in the hardware of the system. Like, for example, it has an array microphone, a microphone array, but it does not use Android's voice activation, which seems kind of fishy. And a couple of other things, one or two other things in the hardware that basically is there but not used, which leads the author to believe that the Pixel C, oh, and also the name, right? So all Android reference devices / hero devices have been under the branding of Nexus until now. Nexus 1 through 6 for the phones, and Nexus 7 through, 9 or 10 or 11 for the tablet. But so this is the first Android tablet with a Pixel branding, which is normally reserved for Google's high-end Chromebooks. So the author believes that this was supposed to be a Chromebook, but for some reason it failed the test. And they said, well, we got to do something with these millions of devices we built, or hundreds of thousands, so let's throw Android on it. The other idea, I think he also postulates at the end that what may have happened is it was supposed to be the first of the hybrid Chrome OS / Android devices that we talked about a few podcasts ago. And I, you know, I'm willing to buy this conspiracy theory. What about you, John?
Yeah, companies have done this in the past, so this wouldn't be too crazy. The person over at Ars Technica is Ron Amadeo, who wrote the piece.
Oh yeah, he's good. He's good.
And it makes a lot of sense. I don't know if we'll ever give verification of this. It's one of those things that hardly ever comes out later in the world. But, you know, maybe a book on Google in 30 years will right. vindicate him.
Or if the Pixel D turns out to be the hybrid device.
yeah, that too.
I don't know why it's called the Pixel C, by the way. I don't know what the Pixels A and B are. Do you?
Those were, super early secret attempts at the Skylab project that, yeah. Why am I saying Skylab? Skylab. Yeah, that's something completely different. I'm trying to make a Terminator reference here.
Skynet,
thank you. Yeah, and unfortunately I'm making a dated aviation reference. I think the Pixel A and B became self-aware and killed their makers. And the Pixel C was the first one that was able to be kept under control.
Okay, we slipped some conspiracy views into this one. Okay, now, I'm really hoping to see a hybrid Chrome OS Android device, by the way. Not because I think it'll work, I'm just curious what it'll look like, because I can't figure it out. It makes no sense. Why would you need a Chrome OS hybrid with Android since Android can already run Chrome browser? But at any rate.
The thousands of brave engineers that will give their life for that project will
make a reason. Allow you to see
what it will look like. Yeah.
Okay. The next one, and I suspect you have a rant about this.
Oh, I do.
And I'm calling this. I'm calling this the Microsoft OneDrive mea culpa update. So again, earlier this week, Microsoft didn't exactly switch gears, but they offered a little. Well, they made an offering of peace to those of us who are kind of ticked off by the way they treated OneDrive users, including the paid people who must be the most ticked off. So. If you are a person who pays $99 a year or $69 a year for one or another edition of Microsoft Office 365, one of the things they promised you early on was unlimited, as in no limits. I'm not sure how much clearer that can be. Unlimited storage on OneDrive. Now, many of us, or I should say some of us, thought that was kind of a dumb idea because unlimited, well, that's a lot of storage, mm-hmm. And people are going to take you up on that. And of course, people did. And Microsoft said, whoa, you can't be storing multiple terabytes of stuff on our thing. And, well, yes, we can. We're paying for it. And you said it's unlimited. At any rate, they switched gears and they said, okay, Office 365 users, you'll be limited to, I think, 1 terabyte, which is still not bad, but you are limited. And some people had more than a terabyte stored, a lot of videos, that sort of thing. But to me, even worse, the free people who had not abused the system, as Microsoft would like to claim. And we were always limited to, you know, a couple of gigabytes. I think I have about 40 gigabytes in loyalty bonuses and camera upload bonus and that sort of thing. They said, hey, you guys are going to go down to 5 gigs. Now, I have about 12 gigs, I think, stored on OneDrive. So that was going to be a problem for me. And not a huge one. I could just delete my photos since I also have them stored over on Yahoo's Flickr as well as Google Photos. So it wasn't going to be a huge hardship, but it was annoying. And, you know, as a old-time user, I was kind of annoyed. But, hey, you know, I'm free. I'm not an Office 365 subscriber. So I figured, well, I can't complain too much. It is a free service. And it's their service. They can do whatever the heck they want with it. Now, John, your thoughts?
My thoughts are, thank you, Microsoft, for deciding to offer an olive branch out to the people that you burned. I do think it's kind of fishy that you're only letting the people who would actually be following this story get this olive branch. It's almost like, okay, if you're a tech geek and you kind of are really mad at us, we'll make you happy. But
that's true.
A lot of people are just going to wake up one day and have their OneDrive screaming at them that they don't have the storage space they thought they had anymore or anywhere close to it.
Yeah.
So this is really a very – and this is something I have not leveled against Microsoft in a while because in general over the last few years they've gotten a lot better. But this is a really weaselly way for Microsoft to try to save face and try to appease their clients by basically saying, okay, the smart ones among you, you can be a little bit better off than all the people who don't follow us during this holiday season when maybe checking blog posts is not high on their priority list, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, I should mention what John is referring to, and I forgot to mention completely, is this olive branch they offer to the free users, at least, to maintain your current quotas, including bonuses. You have to go to a specific web page and click on a link there before, I think, January 16th, 2016, in order to maintain your quota. If you do not click on this link, you will not have whatever it is you have in storage today. You will be back down to 5 gigs, I think.
That's so wonderful for Microsoft to allow people to still keep their storage while also simultaneously screwing over some people.
Yeah, maybe millions.
Yeah. What I'm still curious about, I just logged into a OneDrive account that still has the old 25 gig.
Okay.
You know, the really old OneDrive free level. I'm really curious if that's going to go away. I put a couple of them in the Save My Space page, and I'll see if those stay. And then I have a couple I'm going to leave because I don't really have anything stored in them, and see if those drop back down to 5 gigs or if they still honor the people they grandfathered in 5-10 years ago on this.
Yeah, so we'll find out when we come back to MobileViews in 2016, a couple weeks after, actually. We should probably do one earlier than that. But we will find out. Yeah, for those of you who forgot, OneDrive used to be called SkyDrive. And then Microsoft got sued because some company in Germany is called SkyDrive. And
then before it was SkyDrive, wasn't it one of the Live properties? It was like Live
Drive or something.
Or Live Drive or some weird...
You know, I can't remember. But you're right. It was attached to the Live... You know, well, almost everything was... Everything that wasn't run... A client, Windows client on the PC was called Live at one point, including client applications like LiveWriter. So yes. It was a very confusing branding.
This is Microsoft we're talking
about. Yeah. It would be easy if all Live products were in the cloud, but no, Microsoft mixed and matched because they can. And they don't care.
Yeah. They're drunk with power, Microsoft is.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, Microsoft OneDrive mea culpa. I also call Windows 10, by the way, the mea culpa edition, because Windows 8 was a massive screw-up. Anyway, okay, here's one I don't understand. Maybe, John, maybe you have a better handle on this. So also last week, Amazon announced that Amazon Prime now has something called premium subscriptions to services that you may be familiar with on your cable TV if you haven't cut the cord yet, like Showtime and Stars and a bunch of other lesser-known streaming services. I don't get it. Maybe I don't get it. So you can get, for example, HBO To Go or whatever without having any cable TV. You can pay, I don't know what it costs, $25 a month or whatever HBO charges you. And you can be a cable cutter and still get your HBO movies if that's something you want. I think Showtime is something very similar where you can cut the cord and pay Showtime directly. So I don't know if this is simply a convenience service where people say, hey, I'm an Amazon Prime and hey, look, Showtime or Stars or whatever is available and I'd like to see those movies and other shows on them and I'm going to pay. And I was afraid to click the link to find out what the costs were because they have some kind of free 30-day trial and I didn't actually want to start a trial. So I didn't want them to credit my credit card, which, as you know, Amazon already knows about.
Amazon knows all.
Yeah, them and Google. Yeah, between them and Google, they know everything. If they ever merge, it's going to be really scary. Them, Google, and Facebook. Amazon, face Google. That would be a very scary company.
At which point, Apple will revive the Ping social media network, and we will all jump over to that because, as we know, Apple loves to tell us how much they value our privacy.
That's right. Do you get it, John? I mean, I guess just, convenience. Yeah,
another thing, if you're invested in the Amazon ecosystem, and I assume there are some people out there that are invested in the Amazon ecosystem. I don't think there's a lot compared to some of the other ecosystems.
I should clarify. I don't know if John agrees with my clarification, but my clarification is a lot of people are Amazon Prime buyers of stuff, digital and physical. But not everybody who has Amazon Prime takes advantage of the digital services Amazon offers, like movies, and I think you can pick out a free monthly ebook, and you can loan ebooks and borrow them versus buying them. I think you have unlimited cloud storage for something or other, like music. So there are a lot of digital things that I know I don't take advantage of, even though I'm a regular user of buying stuff, physical stuff through Amazon Prime. So I'm not heavily invested. Sometimes I watch a movie there. That's about it.
I use some of the services. I've used Amazon Music because you pay, I think, $20 a year as a Prime customer, and then you can upload as much music as you want. Yeah. So I've used that on occasion, but I have not used – I've also watched some of the free streaming stuff.
Yeah. I should note, though, since I recently got my Amazon Echo – Amazon Prime Music is actually a lot more important to me than it was before. And I'm finding it doesn't have a lot of stuff I listen to, so that's a little disappointing. But I need to learn what its universe looks like so I know what to ask for in the Echo.
Yep.
Okay. Next, I don't know if you have rants about this one, John.
A small one.
Okay. So also this past week, Apple released an update for iOS version 9.2. And you can go, if you go to mobileviews.com, on my blog. I'll have a link to that article I wrote about it on extremetech.com that details what I thought were the important aspects of it. The one thing I do want to mention, there are a couple of interesting ones. Like, I like the way playlists work now in Apple Music on my iPhone and iPad. I think it makes a lot more sense for the few changes they made to it. Some of the other things really didn't make a difference to me, but one fix made a difference to me, and that is that backups to iCloud were fixed. Now, I've been able to back up my iPad mini and my iPhone to iCloud since upgrading to 9.0. But my iPad 2, my long, trusted, and aging iPad 2, which is my only full-size iPad, it hasn't been able to update since the 9.0 update back in September. So what is that, like 3 months? October? Yeah, it hasn't been able to back up 3 months to iCloud. It has finally been able to back itself up to iCloud since the 9.2 upgrade came out earlier this week. So I don't have a lot of rants, but I'm glad they fixed that one rant I did have. So, John, you said you have a small rant?
Yeah, so previously in iOS 8, if you were an iTunes Match customer an iTunes Match customer, Apple Music always worked a little differently. But if you were an iTunes Match customer and you wanted to download a track to your phone instead of playing it from the cloud, you hit a little cloud icon and it would download. If you wanted to download a whole playlist, you would hit a cloud icon and at the top of the playlist, it would download everything from that playlist. Now, in iOS 9, before this update, the little clouds were gone and you had to hit a little ellipses and then choose download to my device or something like that. That was kind of annoying to switch to. And then now in 9.2, we're back to having the things working, quote-unquote, the normal way with the little clouds.
Now, have you been able to download albums using the cloud? Because I can only download single tracks that I've previously purchased.
Yeah, I've been able to get albums.
Okay, I got to go check that. I didn't try hard, but it didn't work for me.
But my only complaint is that it just annoys me that we went back and forth on this. I think it's better to have it as a cloud, but Apple's one of those ones usually that they train you that once they make an interface change, by God, it's going to stay that interface forever until 2 years later. So I'm not used to Apple switching courses this quickly on an interface change.
Well, I wish they would fix their podcast app, but since I've stopped using it, I guess I don't care anymore.
Oh, that's another little mini rant of mine. Overdrive, the free client now that used to be a paid client. I reinstalled it this week because I'll talk about this in a few minutes. I wiped my iPhone and kind of reset it up from scratch.
Okay.
And now I get the little annoying. I was a paid user of Overdrive. Overcast, yeah, sorry. Yeah. And now I get the little annoying thing like be a patron of Overcast a little thing at the bottom of my playlist window. Hmm. And that's kind of frustrating for someone who bought the
You've already paid for
features.
It.
Yeah. Marco Armont could have done a little better job of coding it up so that if you had previously purchased the upgrade, it would have restored properly when you installed the app again.
Well, that's kind of unusual, especially for a programmer of his caliber. Maybe you ought to just tweet him and let him know.
I might do that.
Yeah, I mean, he seems very responsive on Twitter.
Maybe I will put that in, and then if he sends back something snarky, I can blast him on here.
you're mentioning something got fixed, and I totally forgot I was going to say something else. I know what was annoying me to no end and finally got fixed for me at least, and that's Plants vs. Zombies, the original. I don't like Plants vs. Zombies 2. That's terrible. But the original Plants vs. Zombies, which I still think is one of the best two or three games ever for iOS, or for any platform, really. I don't think it started on iOS, kept showing me missing for all the labels. I think, as John mentioned, it's probably like a P-list problem somewhere over there. But in any case, they finally fixed it, and they actually acknowledged it, I think, in the update. So, Plants vs. Zombies, one of my favorite all-time games for iOS, is finally looking the way it should. It always worked okay. You just couldn't read anything because all the text labels are missing.
You know, I had a similar issue this week that I tweeted out about because it was really kind of funny. I had iTunes open, and I did an update that was a new iTunes version. So
I
did this, And all of a sudden, all of my labels in iTunes started getting really strange. Like, I was getting placeholders, and I was getting... At one point, I tried to remove a track from a playlist, and it told me, when I hit the delete key, it said, if you'd like to play this item, you must enable explicit content. I thought, that really is not what I was trying to do, iTunes. And then I went into the settings at one point, and when going to CD import settings, it said, when I insert a CD, I want... and then a drill drop down. The drop down item selected was Canada. And I don't really know if that's meaning I'm supposed to be invading Canada when I put a CD in there and import Canada into my iTunes. But as soon as I exited out of iTunes and restarted, it all went away. So it must have been a language file that just happened to not get updated in memory or something like that.
Okay, now to briefly return to conspiracy views. I think it's the other way around. I don't think we're going to invade Canada. I think it was a subtle warning from our friends in Canada who are still friends, warning us that the new Canadian government is going to invade us. So in any case, we will see who is right. But hopefully nobody invades nobody.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Now returning back to mobile views and conspiracy views. So John, you've had your iPad Pro for a couple of weeks now. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I got it back in the first, I think, day or two you could get it. And then I had the pencil and the keyboard on back order. Mm-hmm. And those finally did come in about, I guess, maybe a week or two ago.
Okay.
Finally, everything came in. And so, what would you like to hear about?
Well, I'd like to hear what your experiences overall is so far. And since you've got is that a cloth keyboard or whatever the heck they're calling it?
It's
the one that the official Apple keyboard, or is there more than one?
Yeah, it's called a smart keyboard.
Okay,
but it is similar to the type covers. It's kind of a cross between the type cover and the touch cover for the Surface.
Okay, so
it's. It's got a little bit. It's got much more responsiveness than the type cover had, but it's not plastic, hard plastic, like the touch cover.
Okay.
Or the type cover.
Yeah, from Microsoft. Yeah. Okay, so I'd like to hear what your thoughts on the keyboard, because to me, keyboard is always the most important. Were they not using the pencil at all, and if so, for what? And I don't know if you draw or anything, but if you've been trying that. And finally, basically, the iPad Pro, is it okay? So here's the basis of my question about, in general, the iPad Pro and its size. When I first got the very first iPad back in 2010, a lot of people, and not just to me personally, but a lot of people in general are making fun of people with iPads. Oh, you've got a giant iPhone and blah, blah, blah. Why do you need it when you have an iPhone or whatever? It's just not a giant iPhone. And to me, it was more than a quantitative difference in size. It was a qualitative experience difference for me to use an iPad versus the then, 4-inch iPhone. Is it a qualitative difference going up from, a full-size iPad to a, slightly larger, but really pretty big from what I can tell, iPad Pro?
So, a little bit of one. It's kind of honestly, it can be a little bit of an annoying difference. It is a very nice difference in that I feel like I can do more work on documents. And so this week I was grading papers on it. I was doing a little bit of writing on some things on it. And that experience is very nice. It's a lot nicer than the iPad Air 2. But as others have pointed out, and some of our mutual friends have been very annoyed by this, Apple is not using the screen real estate that well at all. The launch pad, the icons are just kind of drifting amid a sea of unused space. So some of the apps are doing a really good job. I really like the redesigned keyboard, the soft keyboard, so that you have the an always there number row and things like that. So it's a work in progress. It's not perfect by any means, and it is qualitatively different in some ways than the iPad Air 2.
Have you been using the split screen feature at all?
I have. I've used that a few times. Although we're still, like all other problems with both split screen on iOS and macOS, we still have developers that haven't updated their APIs yet. Mm-hmm. So we don't have it as powerful as it could be.
Okay. And you said there's something, there's some cons to the larger size. I assume it's just the weight and the bulk.
Yeah, then that is basically it. It's not as good for note-taking as I thought it might be. Hmm. The Air 2 seems to be a much better size for note-taking, whereas the iPad Pro is a better size for having a keyboard and using a keyboard to take notes.
Well, that's interesting, because I would have thought that it would have been great for note-taking despite its larger size, but is it just too heavy or just too wide? Or
yeah, it's just a little bit too big to kind of move around like you would move a notepad around. So I still think I'll be using the iPad Air 2 for when I want to take handwritten notes in meetings. Mm-hmm. And I'll probably bring out the iPad Pro when I need to type things. So if I think I'm going to be taking a lot of notes quickly, then the iPad Pro will be there with the keyboard. If it's just going to be jot down a few things here and there, mark, you know, things like that, I'll probably take the Air 2.
Okay, so my question to you is, since I'm personally interested in this, what software are you using for your handwritten notes in the iPad Air 2?
Note Shelf.
Note Shelf.
And it's all one word.
Okay. I'm just going to scribble this down in our notes since I have no idea what that is. Note Shelf. Okay. And you use like a Bluetooth pen type thing like JotScript or something like that on your iPad Air 2. Is that right?
Yeah, I use the JotScript 2 Evernote edition. Okay. So the second version of the JotScript.
Okay. Is the pencil better, by the way? Speaking of
it is for drawing. I do like the pencil on drawing. It's about the same for handwriting, I'd say.
Oh, that's a little disappointing, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my thought, too, on it. I really was hoping that the pencil would be, hands down, the best stylus I'd ever used. But I'd say that the JotScript Evernote Edition 2, which was much improved over the original JotScript, the Evernote Edition 2 is actually a very nice stylus on par with the Apple Pencil and about $30 cheaper.
Okay, so my plan, since I still think the iPad Pro is way too expensive for me, I did buy iPad Mini 4 finally, but I think the Pro is just way too expensive, and given what people are saying about it's, you know, maybe a little bit too big to be comfortably transported, and for me that's important because I just use a little, you know, MERS, a man bag, to carry my iPad Mini around generally. I'm going to wait. I think I will wait to see if the iPad 3 does two things, really. One, if it is able to use the pencil, because I'm really interested in the pencil, but I just too cheap to buy an iPad Pro. And two, if they include Force Touch in it, as they have an iPhone 6P and iPhone 6S and 6S Plus.
Yeah, Force Touch is definitely something I'm very interested to see in the next version of iOS devices. Although I don't know if it would be an upgradable feature for me. I think I'm going to be happy with my current crop of iPads, the Mini 3, the Air 2, and the iPad Pro, for probably at least a couple generations.
Yeah, I have to say I am glad I finally moved from my first-gen iPad Mini to the iPad Mini 4. It's really nice to have that fingerprint reader so, you know, I don't have to claw at my screen like an animal, as people say.
Well, you know, if that's what you like to do in your spare time.
And it is nice to have the content blockers that you can get for free or for paid from Apple App Store work, because they, you know, they don't work in the older iOS devices. Basically, you need, I think, at least a 5S or something. Yeah. I think you need a 64-bit device, basically. So 5S would be the first 64-bit device in order to use it. So it's nice to have that. Okay, and finally, this week, unless John has something more to add after this.
I briefly mentioned it. I reinstalled my iPhone.
Yeah.
This is something, because Apple's restore features are generally pretty good, I rebuild my iPhone maybe every 3 years. And this, it just got really annoying. I had some buggy app installs after iOS 9 where basically apps would hang on install. Mm. Then you'd have to restart the device and then re-download the app. The app would basically disappear. You'd have to re-download it. My Bluetooth stack would get pretty buggy. It would drop connection with my Apple Watch once or twice a week, and I'd have to cycle Bluetooth to fix that. So now I have none of that. Everything seems to be much more responsive. I've noticed a lot of, quirks that I had gotten used to went away, and the iPhone is doing things like it should have been doing all along. So it's good to remind people that even though iOS doesn't have the same amount of cruft problem that Windows and Android and macOS to some extent has, every so often, it's not a bad idea if you can do it, to just make a list of the apps you use, make sure everything's backed up, and then rebuild. Plus, it really let me make some hard choices. I had 164 third-party apps installed on my iPhone, and now I'm down to just a measly 80 or so.
Yeah, I have to say, moving from my iPad mini to my iPad mini 4, I didn't do a restore, you know, because I didn't think it'd make any sense. But I basically just started adding in the apps I actually use, and it's a much smaller number than I didn't do a head count, but it's a much smaller number.
Yeah, so something to just be mindful as a geek to remember that sometimes you still have to, and it's not the Windows 95 days where I was reinstalling every 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, gosh.
But, you know, it's pretty close. Yeah, we used to think nothing of that. Yeah. Oh, I'll just reinstall Windows.
Right.
You know, big deal.
Right. Okay, and finally, a tip. So for one of my favorite purchases of this year, the Amazon Echo, and I'm surprised to say that, by the way, for a long time. I thought it was the silliest thing I ever saw. But in any case, I ended up buying one. I had intended to give it to my mom, and I did. I took it over. I had it all set up for her. And she just didn't seem to be interested in using it, so I brought it back home. But in any case, one of the things I learned, I mean, I think somebody mentioned it to me earlier on. I mean, one of my friends, like Paul Lawler, was on a few weeks ago, who bought it when it was first released. The Amazon Echo is also, among other things, a Bluetooth speaker. So you can send audio to it from your mobile device. And I was thinking, hey, you know, I wonder if it'll work with my notebook. So test number one, a Dell notebook running Windows 10. No dice. It doesn't even see the Amazon Echo as a Bluetooth device. It won't. So you can't even pair with it. On the other hand, in my MacBook Pro running OS 10, what are we running now, John? El Capitan.
Yeah.
Paired with it fine, and actually works in a surprising way, and correct way, I think. So if you have your headset plugged in, it will not switch to the Bluetooth speaker, but you can manually force it even with the headset in. So basically two things. One, it sees it, it pairs with the Echo, and two, it behaves properly. So if you have your headset on, it presumes that your headset is your primary audio out, and it will route audio to that. But you can go into the Bluetooth settings and say, hey, send it over to my Amazon Echo, even though I have a headset plugged in, and it'll do that. It's a little bit bassy for things like podcasts, I found, which is, I'm not quite sure why, because I do listen to podcasts streaming from the Echo. Oh, gosh, I forget which service they use. But it seemed a little bit bassy when I was listening to some podcasts as a test. In any case, it's kind of neat. So, you know, I can use my Amazon Echo as an external Bluetooth speaker, and it's a pretty nice speaker. It's about 3 watts, so it's probably a little bit bigger than most of the little plug-in speakers you might use, unless you're an audiophile and have one of those expensive ones. So that's my tip. If you have an OS X desktop or notebook, you can use the Amazon Echo if it's situated near your Mac device as an external speaker, and it's a pretty good one.
Good to know. Yep. I like using anytime you could use something in addition to what it was designed for, or even a secondary use that it was designed for. It's a pretty nice win.
Yeah. You know, one of the other things I've been thinking about is, you know, you and I have talked about it. John has had the ODB2 dongle for his car for a long time, I think now, that takes metrics on the cars and so forth. The Amazon Echo apparently talks to some of them, so it can get data from, I think, the Automatic brand, maybe another one too. So you know, now it's narrowing down my brand choices by figuring out what the Amazon Echo. I don't know if the Echo has to be within 10 meters of your car, or how it, you know, if it reads it from your phone. I'm not sure how that works. But in any case, really happy with the Amazon Echo. Glad I got it when the price dropped briefly to $150. Wish I had bought it at $100 during its initial offering. But oh well, I'm glad I got it. It's a handy tool in my home now. Okay, so that's Mobile Views Podcast number 141, Taro Gasawara, John Westfall. We will talk to you in our last podcast of 2015 with our special guest, Don Sorcinelli, next week. We may add even more conspiracy views when Don joins us for the last
podcast. Oh, I'm sure we definitely will.
Okay, folks. We will talk to you next time.